Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 10 of the Fan. I've got a bone to pick with the city of Portland, with the people that run the Trailblazers, and with Blazer Fan. For people who don't know, I grew up in Portland. I was a big Blazer fan as a kid. During the Jailblazer era, less so. My dad was fully out, so I would go up in my room and listen to the games on the radio, pretending I went to bed early. So I was still a Blazer fan, but I did so discreetly. I am, after this trade deadline, I am ready to just beat my head against the wall for so many different reasons. And one being, and namely, that Damian Lillard is a truly unique and special talent. On last week's show, I argued he should probably be seriously in the discussion for the MVP, if not the MVP. And it just feels like we keep going down this road of Blazers make very minor deal. Blazer fan gets fully supportive very quickly. Yay. They made a move. Hooray. Exciting. We've got a chance to win the finals. Who do the Nets have? Harden, Kyrie, and Kevin Durant? Yeah, well, we've got Rocco.
Anthony Simons. Don't forget.
Dame's 30 years old. And Portland has never really gone all in at any point in his career. They've never really risked it. And Blazer fan got really, really excited. And Olshay tried to sell Blazer fan, getting really, really excited this offseason when they got Robert Covington and Derrick Jones Jr. First of all, Derrick Jones Jr. was not part of the Heat rotation in the finals last year. So as much as everybody thought, I don't even know where that came from other than he won a dunk contest. The idea that Portland got Derrick Jones Jr. and that was going to make a difference was silly. He wasn't even part of the playoff picture for the Heat in the finals at all. Did not play. I mean, he might have played like garbage minutes, but wasn't a rotation piece at all. It was, okay, games matter now. Why don't you have a seat? And that was the piece that was going to take Portland over the hump. Then Robert Covington, who I like. I like Robert Covington. He's not LeBron James. He's not Anthony Davis. And he sure as heck isn't the Nets group consisting of Harden, Kyrie, and Kevin Durant. And I think as a Blazer fan, sometimes we lack perspective. We love our team. By the way, Portland just pulls out a win over Miami, and I'm happy about that. 125 to 122. Free throws late. Seal it for Portland. They came back late to get the win with a nice late run. I'm happy for them.
I totally thought they were going to blow this game.
I did too. And Jimmy Butler's not playing, and Goran Dragic aren't playing for the Heat. I just don't get where we decide year after year. Like the whole idea that, well, the Blazers could have won a title that year that Wesley Matthews got hurt. Really? You really think the Blazers could have won a title the year Wesley Matthews got hurt? Hey, we made the Western Conference Finals. Oh, the year that the Warriors were hurt and the Nuggets were too young and it was a fluke and then you got absolutely demolished in the Western Conference Finals?
Train wrecked.
And you seriously think you're close? And listen, I'm all for Blazer fan being supportive of their team. Dame is amazing. Damian Lillard is one of the most amazing talents ever in the history of this city. You could make a strong argument, that he's the greatest Blazer of all time. I love Damian Lillard. He's 30 years old, and I feel like Portland is wasting wasting his prime without making a major move. You have to put, at some point, put your nuts on the table and make a move. Take a risk. You cannot just keep kicking the can down the road. If you missed it, the Blazers trade today was Gary Trent Jr. and Rodney Hood to the Raptors for Norman Powell. Norman Powell, it was sold by some people, has another year on his deal. It's a player option. He's not taking it because he's been incredible this year. He's been incredible this year. Not all-star level, but right below it. So he is not going to take, I think it's $11 million. He's not going to take that player option. So he's done after this year in terms of with Portland. He'll become an unrestricted free agent. And the Blazers give up Gary Trent Jr. and Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood has not been good this year in limited minutes. Gary Trent Jr. is young. He's not as good this year as Norman Powell. He'd be a restricted free agent, and in all likelihood, he walks at the end of the year. So your big move at the deadline, in a year where you're playing pretty good, Nurk's coming back, you've got to feel like you've got a chance. With the Lakers banged up, you've got to, the Warriors are down this year with Klay being hurt, you've got a chance maybe to come out of the West. Maybe. In all the years that Blazer fan tries to psych themselves up, we've got a chance, we've got a chance. This is a year where you really might. And your move is a B Norman Powell upgrade from a B minus Gary Trent. And then, if you listened to Primetime earlier today, Quick said, Olshay and the Blazers said they were not in on the Aaron Gordon sweepstakes. Aaron Gordon is the four you actually need. A stretch four who's good on defense, who can hit the three, who can rebound. He can do a little of everything, and he upgrades you. And oh yeah, you get him for not just this year, but next year.
The kicker is he cost damn near nothing. Denver didn't give him really anything. But there's that coveted first round pick that Olshay has.
Denver gave up Gary Harris Jr., who was good a couple years ago. He's on the decline, no question. RJ Hampton, a flyer on a young kid, and a late first-round pick. Denver's late first-round pick. For Aaron Gordon, who you have this year, and you control him for next year. If you're at some point going to go all in on the Blazers, part of the landscape, part of being knowledgeable, part of being the GM and not a fan, is doing the math of, is this a year where we can really win it? And when the Warriors were at full strength, I think Olshay gets a little bit of a pass for not gambling the future to make a run at a Warriors team that was an all-time juggernaut. I get that. I'm okay with that. The Warriors have injuries. The Lakers have issues. This is actually a window, potentially. Now, the Nets look like a juggernaut in the finals, but there's always going to be a team somewhere that's a juggernaut. You've got a real chance to make it out of the West. Damian Lillard's having the best season of his career. CJ McCollum, now that he's back and he began the year with the best season he's ever had, you've got Nurk coming back. Make a move. This is the time. This is the year. Damian Lillard is 30 years old. Gary Trent Jr. is an interesting piece for an Eastern Conference contender. Flip him and get something that you can make a push now. And instead, Portland gets a few months of a slight upgrade with Norman Powell. It bothers me.
Well, here's one of my big questions. So I was here at 4:30 this morning. I rode with the boys Dirt and Sprague this morning. So it's been a long day of Blazers for me. But I asked this question, and I still haven't heard a great answer. Why is it that the national media seems to think that Olshay is doing a great job and the local media buries him? Like, where is the cutoff? Like, where is the local media missing it? I don't bury Olshay. Is the local media missing it, or is the national media missing it?
Well,
because they're very contrasting opinions.
This trade deadline, and we will get to recruiting, by the way. I've got some recruiting stuff later in the show for sure. This trade deadline, the Raptors got a better grade than the Blazers, and the Blazers didn't get a great grade for this trade in a vacuum. Not only that, but I think you are kicking the can down the road. And I think Olshay's big thing comes from a few years back during free agency when they thought the cap was going to go up a ton. It didn't. And they signed Myers and Evan Turner to multi-year big deals. And none of those guys produced in any way, shape, or form. And it put a halt on your ability to build because no one wanted to trade for Evan Turner's bloated contract, Myers Leonard's bloated contract.
Myers Leonard, free agent right now.
Yeah. Oof. Oof. I think that really stalled things for a few years. And that's hard to blame him because a lot of people thought This is your window. The cap's going to go up. Sign these guys. They'll be bargains at the time. And they weren't. So that hit put a pause on the Blazers being able to do a whole lot for a little while. But you've had a window here. This is your window. Dame's playing unbelievable, and the West doesn't have that juggernaut team it's had for 5, 6, 7 years in a row. Make the move. Make a move. What I don't want to see, and it comes from love of Dame. It really does. I don't hate the Blazers. I like the Blazers. It comes from a passion that when you have a guy who's getting older, he's 30 now, put the pieces around him, make a gamble, take a gamble once, leverage your future once to go get that guy. Zach Collins, they knew was going to be a project draft pick because he struggled his freshman year at Gonzaga. He was in foul trouble. He was a sixth man. Anfernee Simons was a guy who kind of by a weird rule was able to be draft eligible out of high school, even though you're kind of not supposed to be able to do that because he went to grad school for you. That is not necessarily an immediate help type of piece. That's a kick the can down the road, build for the future piece. Neil Olshey seems to consistently take that, well, let's not go all in with this team. Let's kind of stay status quo, add little pieces and see where we're at. And Blazer fan just nods. What I don't want to see is 3 years from now, 4 years from now, Damian Lillard's 33, 34, the age where a lot of point guards start to kind of decline a little bit. Not completely, but they start to kind of tail off. And Portland goes, man, I really wish just one time we would have put our nuts on the table and gone all in to build a team to make a push. And instead, there's always an excuse. Zach Collins is hurt. Aaron Gordon, not that special. Really? What do you have now at the four that you feel is so special? Rocco? It just feels like part of it, too, is we signed Derrick Jones Jr. We signed Robert Covington in the offseason. We can't have those not be the answer because then it makes it look like I messed up free agency again and the trades again. So I don't want to absolutely for sure get Aaron Gordon and then go, yeah, Covington and Jones Jr. didn't really move the needle as much as we hoped. It's almost like we can't admit that, so we're going to die on this hill and waste another year. Because Portland's good. Portland's a good team. They may make a run. They may make a Western Conference Finals run. This year, they're good. They're getting healthy. They're playing pretty good basketball. But you had an opportunity to bolster your roster, and you kind of chose instead to go, meh. It'd be nice to have another guard that can shoot threes. It's like, really? Feels like that's the only thing Portland has a lot of. You got another one.
It reminds me of the days when we had about 17 forwards on the roster. Nothing else, just forwards for days.
And
you know, which is a big reason why we didn't take Kevin Durant back in the day. Because we had forwards for days. Now we have guards for days.
You got Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Gary Trent Jr., Anfernee Simons. You've got guards, and I know Trent's gone now. But it just feels like there was potential here to trade one of those pieces. And never mind, I mean, heaven forbid we talk about trading CJ at any point ever. I mean, that's a non-starter, so fine, it's a non-starter. But heaven forbid you ever consider doing something to leverage the future to bring in a second all-star to help Dame out. Heaven forbid. And here we are again, a minor rental move in an open window year when really there is no clear-cut superstar super team in the West, and Portland kind of had an opportunity. What if they'd have gotten Aaron Gordon for a future first and Anfernee Simons and then traded Gary Trent for Norman Powell? I mean, I don't know if the contracts work, to be honest.
Why are you speaking logic?
But at least you're adding multiple pieces and you're trying to get better and you're making a push. This just feels like let's do something so people aren't annoyed. I'm annoyed. And worse, and this came from a lot of different places. There are a lot of people who are involved in the media right now in Portland who don't cover sports. They cover other things, but there's nothing going on, right? There's just nothing going on. We're still in COVID a little bit, so they want to have some opinions on stuff. There are some takes that are like, this trade is disastrous for Portland. They traded a young guard in Gary Trent Jr. for an aging Norman Powell. Trent's going to be gone next year. You didn't just leverage your future with Gary Trent to get Norman Powell. That's not how this works. Pay attention to contracts. And if you don't understand how it works, do not get on Twitter and spout wild opinions about leveraging the future.
That is what Twitter was created for, to be uneducated and spout your views.
Well, there are a couple people who have several thousand followers who are news anchors or news reporters who were like, this trade is a disaster, or this trade is a monster home run. Norman Powell's going to be great for the next 2 or 3 years. Pay attention to the contracts. Pay attention to things how actually work before you spout off. Expectations. I think we get in trouble a little bit, whether it's our Blazers, whether it's the trade deadline, or whether it's recruiting, with expectations. And I've had a couple of questions about Oregon's Sweet 16 run, Oregon State's Sweet 16 run, Oregon's future at the quarterback position in football, and what fans should make of the future based on the recruiting expectations. What should you expect, and what should fans expect early in a big-time recruit's career? We'll talk about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
From game tapes to junior days to recruiting visits, this is where it all happens. On Point Credit Union presents Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
I've been asked a ton about expectations here in the last couple months, and I think part of it is Oregon and Oregon State both making Sweet 16 runs, Oregon in both women's and men's basketball, Oregon State in men's basketball, and people are really anxious because there's not a ton going on in the world of football, so they're talking draft, and they're talking the future of different programs, so I get asked about it when it comes to Oregon football and recruiting, and one of the areas that it was brought up was this Oregon women's team. And did they underperform given that they brought in five McDonald's All-Americans this year and they were only a six seed?
Who is asking if this team has underperformed? Because they're a six seed? Because they're still alive last I checked.
Right, but I actually think it's a fair question when you look up and down the roster at the five McDonald's All-Americans and go, aren't McDonald's All-Americans in a vacuum? You think, aren't McDonald's All-Americans supposed to just be like great from day one? So I don't see five freshmen killing it.
But I mean, if five freshmen who are all McDonald's All-Americans, if they're going to kill it from the get-go, Kentucky would have five national titles in the last 15 years.
Well, and I think also it would mean your program is absolutely barren, right?
Yes.
Because you should have a junior somewhere.
Somewhere.
A senior somewhere. Like, a sophomore somewhere.
Like, why is Gonzaga so great right now? Because they have sophomores, juniors, seniors everywhere, and they got a superstar freshman.
I would have never guessed, Patrick, that you were going to somehow tie this back to Gonzaga. but I think it's a fair question. I think we get bogged down sometimes on if they're a five-star, they should be great from day one. And I think we need a little perspective here. You look at the Oregon women's program and their run to this Sweet 16. They're a six seed. They've had injuries. They've had a COVID stoppage. And if you go back and look at it, if you go back and really look at what they're doing and you look at the history of the program, Oregon signed a class that had Sabrina Ionescu and Ruthie Hebert, and their freshman year, they were a 10 seed. And people forget that because you weren't paying attention then. Most people weren't. I actually watched every game because the coaching staff, when they signed them, was like, this is going to be the future. Like, we're going to be incredible. We might win a national championship.
Right.
People don't know. So I was like, I got to tune in and watch the growth. I want to see the development.
And what happened to Sabrina? Top 10, top five player of all time in college basketball?
And as a freshman, I believe she averaged something like 11 or 12 points and five assists a game. Tahina Pau-Pau this year, an all-conference freshman guard, a top five player of the year candidate after her senior year in high school. They won the AAU national title and the national title in high school basketball. She's averaging 11 and 5. So she's averaging roughly the same as Sabrina Ionescu averaged as a freshman. But I don't think a lot of people were paying attention to what they were doing until they were already elite. So then you start paying attention to the expectation, right? People started paying attention when Sabrina Ionescu, Ruthie Hebert, and Satu Sabali were sophomores and freshmen, and they were one of the top 10 teams in the nation. And they went, oh, this seemed to happen overnight. It didn't. There was a hiccup year where they were only a 10 seed. I was there in the room when they were announced to be in the tournament. They were thrilled because they were a bubble team. They were thrilled. There was a big celebration.
Well, and you got a bunch of freshmen running around.
They were thrilled that they got in. This team knew they were going to get in. They had injuries. They've got a couple of sophomore posts.
Dealt with some COVID this year.
In Sedona Prince and Nayara Sabali, who are coming off injuries. So they've got sophomore posts, freshmen, and then a lot of, frankly, underperforming juniors and seniors who just kind of haven't helped bridge the gap between the Sabrina, Ruthie, Satu group and this freshman group. So they're a sixth seed in the Sweet 16. Am I disappointed that not every one of those freshmen is averaging 8 points, five boards, or five assists a game? No. This is how it happens. You see, especially late in the year, you start to see real growth. Matty Shear looks great for Oregon. You see the sophomores. Sedona Prince was a top 10 recruit in the nation coming out of high school. I believe she first went to Texas and then transferred to Oregon. She's hitting her stride now as a sophomore. Nayara Sabali was supposed to be a phenom. She got hurt twice. She missed 2 years with knee injuries. She's now got 20, 25 games under her belt. She's starting to look better. This is the natural progression. Oregon State women's basketball, an 8 seed in the tournament, made a Final Four. I don't know if people know, one of the underreported stories, although I've been trying to say stuff about it, we talked about it last week, they've gotten a 5-star and averaged more than a 5-star because they've had a number of years where they've gotten 2 5-star recruits every single year for like 7 consecutive years. Oregon State and Oregon played a couple years ago, and there was only one non-5-star on the floor for the starting lineup. Oregon and Oregon State both have ridiculous, ridiculous talent. 5 stars all over the place. So that is the expectation in women's basketball. But don't expect it to come right away. And I'm already getting the questions. How good is Ty Thompson going to be as the starter this fall?
Right. College football is such a great comparison for this, okay? Especially the quarterback position. For every Trevor Lawrence, there is 25 Mac Jones, Joe Burrows.
And
guys that have great senior years, but they either transfer or they sit behind high draft picks and Heisman Trophy winners. Is Mac Jones a bad quarterback? No, he's a great quarterback.
He's going to be a first-round pick.
You know, he's not the number one overall. He's not a Heisman winner. He's not Joe Burrow. He's not Trevor Lawrence. But it took him a little bit, whether he was sitting behind somebody or whatever, to get there. You know, Justin Herbert had flashes when he was young, but I think it's safe to say we didn't expect him to look as good as he did last year in an LA Charger jersey.
Kyler Murray was the national player of the year in high school.
Exactly.
Went to college, transferred,
yeah,
and ended up being then, after that, a Heisman Trophy winner. No one would say Kyler Murray didn't live up to that 5-star hype.
Still sat behind Baker Mayfield.
It's really hard to judge a guy, a girl, whoever it is, a recruit, in year one as a 5-star recruit. If you see flashes, same thing with Kayvon Thibodeau when he got to Oregon. I wasn't looking for him to have a 15-sack season. I wanted to see 10 to 15 plays where I went, oh my God, if he puts it together.
And now, being somebody that watched every single Oregon Duck because I was sitting in this room doing it, Oregon Duck game this year, now, next year, I want to see 15 sacks from Kayvon Thibodeau.
But I think that's a natural progression.
Exactly.
That's his expectation.
Exactly.
I think Oregon fan right now is of the expectation that when they get a 5-star recruit, because it gets so much attention, they're going to be phenomenal from day one, year one, play one.
Well, it's a society of gimme, gimme, gimme. I want it now.
Like, I look at Frank Kepnang. Frank Kepnang came to Oregon early. He should be in high school right now. He was the number 24 recruit in the nation and decided to enroll early, and he's at Oregon. He's averaging probably roughly, I don't know off the top of my head, like 2 points, one rebound a game because he barely plays. I don't think anybody watches Frank Kepnang and goes, man, bust. And he's right on the bubble of being a 5-star recruit. The number 24 player in the nation's right on the edge of being a 5-star recruit. You see the athleticism. You see the power in the post. You saw him block those shots in their round of 32 game. There's clearly something there.
Right.
That's what you want to see when you're looking for 5-stars. Tahina Paopao being an all-conference player as a freshman, that's the outlier. Cameron Brink is local. She played at Mountainside High School. She was the number 3 recruit in the nation. She went to Stanford, the number 1 team in the nation. She's an honorable mention all-conference player. That's ahead of the curve. That's wildly ahead of the curve. And she's averaging something like 8-6. That's incredible. And she's the number 3 recruit in the nation. I just think we need to take a step back. Ty Thompson probably isn't the starter from day one. And guess what? It doesn't mean he's a bust.
Yeah, I'll give you another example to take it away from programs that have huge expectations, okay? I went to Washington State. We don't have huge expectations. If we get a 4-star, it's Christmas. You know, that doesn't happen, okay? We're used to it. We get it. We run systems, all that kind of stuff. Let's take this year, for example. So it's different when you're in Oregon, when you're a Clemson, where you get these high recruits, then there's those expectations that fall in. Let's come back down to reality. Someone in the middle range, Jaden Delora, comes in. We're kind of like, okay, he goes to the same school as Tua, same school as Marcus. All right, all right. I want to see this. He's been doing the run and shoot offense. Should be a tailor-made fit. The kid's 18, 19. There were about three times throughout the shortened season that Wazoo played that I saw moments from him that I go, oh.
Yeah.
I like this.
I felt the same way.
And there, did he make a ton of mistakes? Of course he made a ton of mistakes. He's a true freshman starting in a Power 5 conference with no offseason in a COVID-shortened year. But I had three moments where I went, ooh, I like what I see here.
Yep, and that's what you got to look for. I mean, that's what it comes down to in recruit. As a freshman, if you're looking at your five-star freshman, unless they're Haloti Ngata and they're just off-the-charts freaks.
Well, when you're 320 pounds and 18 years old, that helps.
True. Unless they're just out of this world, what you look for as a freshman is a handful. You know, in football, it's 10 to 15 because there's so many plays. In basketball, you're looking for three or four games where you're like, whoa, where did that come from? Where did that athleticism come from? Where did that 17-point game come from? You're looking for that, and you go, okay, they're on pace. People forget about Peyton Pritchard's freshman year. All he was really a facilitator. He missed a lot of threes. He didn't shoot very well from the floor. He passed nicely. He didn't drive much at all. And he was the national point guard of the year his senior year.
Well, and I would argue that's why he's in the NBA.
And real flashes.
And that's why I'd argue that's why he's in the NBA. And he might bounce around. He might not be a starter or stay at one team forever. But he's going to play in the league for 5 to 7 years minimum.
Right. You're looking for that. You're looking for flash. Sophomore year, you want to see kind of a breakout where you go, okay, they're solid to very good. And junior year is when you expect that explosion where you go, wow. I mean, it's the same. To some extent, it's the same as high school. When you hear about an eighth grader that like, oh my God, this eighth grader is going to be incredible in high school. You don't necessarily expect them to be an all-league guy as a freshman. You don't expect that. Sophomore year, you think, okay, they're going to make varsity. If they start varsity, that's pretty amazing. Junior year, you better be all league pushing all state. Same kind of deal for college. I think the Oregon recruiting or the Oregon quarterback battle is really interesting. I want to delve into that and also break down what's going to happen with official visits because they are coming. It's been since March of 2020 that kids have been able to step on a campus with a coach in an in-person visit. Visits are coming back. I will give you the timeline and let you know who some of the guys are who are visiting Oregon next.
From game tapes to junior days to recruiting visits, this is where it all happens. On Point Credit Union presents Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Spent the last segment discussing expectations for five-star recruits, which leads me into Ty Thompson.
Expectations for five-star recruits.
Yes. Which leads me into more expectations for five-star recruits. Because I've been asked about the tournament, the Oregon men, the Oregon women, the Oregon State men, the Oregon State women. What are the expectations when they bring in big-time recruits? I don't think people realize the Oregon Ducks signed 5 five-star recruits in women's basketball last year. They're all true freshmen. The Oregon State women have signed seemingly at least one for like 7 consecutive years and are averaging more than one per year because they've had a couple of years in there where they signed 2 or 3. Oregon and Oregon State have an absolute dynasty when it comes to basketball recruiting, and people don't realize it. They recruit just below UConn, Baylor, just below. And last year, Oregon had the number one recruiting class in the nation. 5 McDonald's All-Americans. All 5 were Jordan Brand Classic selections. All 5 were 5-star recruits. Pretty good.
They are more, let's see, what am I trying to say here? They are more consistent than a Stanford, even in the own conference.
They have been the last few years in terms of recruiting, in terms of just pure recruiting the last 5 or 6 years. Now, Stanford just signed the number one recruit in the nation this past year, so it's a little different this past year. And Cameron Brink, who's the number 3 recruit in the nation.
But they're right there. I would say for a non-watcher, we assume Stanford is the bread and butter of the conference, but maybe not so much from a recruiting standpoint.
Correct. I think Oregon and Oregon State women both recruit at a top 10 to 12 level every year. In fact, and I mentioned this on the show last year, in the class of 2022, there's only one program in the nation who has 2 top 10 women's basketball players committed in the entire country. It's Oregon State. They have the number 4 player in the nation and the number 10 player in the nation committed. No other program has more than one. Oregon State has the number 1 recruiting class in the nation right now for the class of 2022. Oregon had it last year. It tells you how well these programs actually recruit. Ty Thompson, though, I think the expectation right now is it's going to be either Anthony Brown as the starter, the returner who transferred, obviously, from Boston College last year, or Ty Thompson. And I think that really, one, does a disservice to Jay Butterfield. People forget, DJ Uiagalelei, number one recruit in the nation at the time, number one quarterback in the nation throughout his whole recruitment, chose Clemson over Oregon. And a week later, Oregon got Jay Butterfield. And maybe some of it was hangover over not getting DJ Uiagalelei. Maybe some of it is just that Ty Thompson's a five-star, and so everybody's excited about him. When Jay Butterfield committed, he was the number two pro-style quarterback in America, behind only DJ Uiagalelei, who played as a true freshman at Clemson. That's the only guy that was rated higher.
And looks real nice.
And looks good. Looks very good. I think we do a disservice when we fall in love with the hot item sometimes, especially in football, when you need to physically mature. I think Ty Thompson's got a shot to win the job. I think Anthony Brown's got a shot to win the job. But I also think Jay Butterfield has a shot to win the job. And if it's Jay Butterfield, I don't think that's an indictment on Ty Thompson. And I'm starting to wonder, and maybe this is unfair, I am starting to wonder a little bit if Oregon fan in general, when they get a five-star recruit, expects them to be great from day one. Kayvon Thibodeau was not great from day one. Now, he was a great prospect from day one. You saw flashes from day one, but you would not have said that's an all-conference guy. You would have said definitely he's got an all-American future because he flashed. But at the quarterback position, you can't really just flash. And that's what you expect from an elite recruit as a freshman, unless they're Trevor Lawrence.
And again, especially in today's society where, you know, we need that instant gratification. When you see that five-star, when you see a five-star quarterback coming in and you look at your quarterback room, which again, I think it's fair to not trash Butterfield or Anthony Brown. Like, I think Anthony Brown will be the starter at the beginning of the year. I think you agree with me on that. But in a year where Shuck had his ups and downs, at moments he looked like the answer, and at other moments he looked like, why is this guy still playing? So there's all this uncertainty. So when you see that five-star come in, you almost can't help, especially when you're a team that competes at the level Oregon does, you almost can't help yourself.
It's true.
But say, look, our quarterback situation is a disaster, quote unquote, which it's not.
No, I think
the quarterback situation
is
actually
a
really great spot. Cristobal has hard choices to make, but that's his job. And I'd rather have hard choices for good reasons than hard choices for bad reasons.
And that's a brilliant way to put it. It really is. I think people say, oh man, Shuck's gone. We don't have a Herbert. We don't have a Mariota.
There's a reason Anthony Brown didn't start most of the season. Yeah, because Cristobal wanted to see what he had in Shuck.
Right. And Brown had a shortened season to learn the system. I think Oregon, no matter what, has three really good quarterbacks and one phenomenal, phenomenal athlete sitting fourth. And it's Robbie Ashford. And if you haven't been paying attention to what Robbie Ashford's doing for Oregon baseball, it is a treat.
Yep. I have to sometimes cover those games, and I was like, why do I know this guy? Oh, whatever.
When they need a run late in games, it's happened a couple times already this year. He'll hit a single, steal second, get to third on a pitch in the dirt, not even, you know, a pass ball or a wild pitch, and then just score on a sack fly. Or, oh, they need a run. Okay, stand up triple. Maybe could have made it an inside the Parker, but with no outs, why risk it? He's that guy in baseball. He's already kind of a bona fide star, and he's lightning quick, so he's great out in the outfield, and he's got a cannon for an arm. He's a quarterback at Oregon. He's a big-time prospect, and a year from now, because he's older, he's going to get drafted in the Major League Baseball draft, and he might get drafted really high. So if that's your fourth guy, like if everything else fails, and you put together a guy back there who's like a 4-5 guy that's like, I can throw 70 yards in the air, there's at least something exciting in the tools. I think the Oregon quarterback room is in as good a spot depth-wise, as it's been in a number of years. I remember there being years where it was like, if Dennis Dixon gets hurt, it's over. Because Brady Leaf, Justin Roper, ain't it.
I've lived that my entire Mike Leach life.
If Mariota gets hurt, it's over. Because there's nobody behind him. And that's not the case this year. I think Oregon could go in a number of directions and still feel really good about it. And that That is the key, really, more than anything else, to recruiting and why Alabama has success and why Ohio State has success and why Clemson has success and why Oregon's elite success when it comes to their recruiting results hasn't even really manufactured itself on a football field. Because you're going to hit, when you sign top 10 recruiting classes, you're going to hit on a couple, three, four superstars. You're just going to.
Yeah.
Because some are going to pan out, some aren't.
But you can't expect to have seven or eight superstars.
But if you string together four and five recruiting classes like that, your depth gets really good. Oh, crap. Our second corner got hurt. Who's our third corner? Oh, five-star cornerback Dante Manning, an incredible athlete. He's not going to get cooked out there. That's where, and yes, Alabama has the stars. Nobody would deny that, right? They got Mac Jones, Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, Najee Harris, stars. But when those guys go down, the guy behind them is also very good. And when you start stacking that depth, that shows more than just saying, man, I hope our five-star freshman is great.
Look at Jalen Hurts. Look at Jalen Hurts in the national championship. He gets pulled in some kid, that Tua, that we're all hear great things about. And
exactly.
Hello.
You don't necessarily Natty. Need Ty Thompson to be great from day one because you've done your job as a recruiter the last 3 or 4 years.
And I think you benefit. I think they actually benefit strongly from Tyler Shuck leaving in this situation because I think it's pretty obvious to put Brown in there in the beginning. If he struggles, then you can go with the kid if you want to. But now you don't have this. You don't have Brown versus Shuck again.
Well, I think the biggest thing is if Butterfield and Thompson aren't ready, you don't need another competitor.
Exactly.
You need a Band-Aid.
Exactly.
And Anthony Brown's a senior. He's a Band-Aid. He gives him one more year to get ready. Shuck would have been a sophomore coming back because this year didn't count. And you've got sophomore, freshman, and something's got to give. And if Shuck has a big year, you might see one of those two guys go, I got to go. If Brown has a big year this year, they go, eh, my job next year.
Yep, exactly.
It actually cleared the room. It cleared the tension out of the room. And I don't think people fully realize how good a spot Oregon is in. Official visits are going to happen. Unofficial visits are going to happen for real. After 14 or 15 months, I will lay out the timeline. Who's visiting Oregon? When does it start? When can we expect normal, air quotes, recruiting results, recruiting visits, recruiting coverage? Again, I will tell you next.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
From game tapes to junior days to recruiting visits, this is where it all happens. On Point Credit Union presents Recruiting with Andrew Nemeth on 1080 The Fan.
We've almost had to change that open. From game day,
oh yeah,
to commitments to recruiting visits. But since March of last year, there have been games occasionally. Albeit delayed and not a full schedule.
Not if you're in the South, though.
We've had
commitments. All bets are off in the South.
We've had commitments. Plenty of them. But since March of last year, we have not had visits because coaches have not been allowed to have in-person contact with recruits since March of last year. And the NCAA has proposed and accepted that the dead period will last through the end of May. So we are going to go 14 months without recruits visiting.
Do recruits usually visit during like spring ball?
Yes.
Okay. Just to kind of see, like, see how practice works, see how coach runs things.
The spring game is a monster visit event because it's a game. There's somewhat of a game atmosphere.
But it's like an in-house game. Yes.
So it's really personal and family oriented. And the spring game is always, and junior day. Usually programs have a junior day. They invite the top sophomores and juniors to campus, their top recruits. And those are unofficial visits. The kids pay their own way. But everyone believes, everyone I've talked to, everyone who's written about it, everyone believes after that May 31st that the NCAA has already declared will be the dead period. That's when they'll reevaluate. From then on, the NCAA is going to allow visits again. And oh my gosh, the floodgates are going to open. Because you have kids who have been getting letters or been getting texted or been getting messages or just been putting film together that frankly is absolutely ridiculous for 14 months now. And they've been chomping at the bit to say, I want to go through a recruitment. I want to see my options. It's great that I started COVID with no offers and now I have 53 offers, but I've never seen a single campus because I'm not allowed.
And catch me. Like,
and
catch
now
me
they are.
Catch me if I'm wrong, because I'm a little ignorant to this stuff. when you go and visit, so if you're, you know, the number three running back in Texas and you're looking at Oregon, can they pay your way to get there?
An official visit.
Yeah.
Every recruit gets 5 official visits. An official visit is you and a family member, or you and sometimes like
a guardian or whatever
guardian.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. It cannot be like a girlfriend or your brother.
Right.
Like it has to be a guardian adult of some kind. There are some exceptions depending on the family situation. Right. Depending on the family situation.
Sure.
And you get 5 of those, and every school gets a certain amount of them.
Okay.
So if there's heavy interest in Alabama, Alabama can't go like, you get an official visit. You get it. Right. Everybody gets an official visit. It doesn't work like that. We aren't Oprah handing out cars, right? So you only get a few of them. So, and a few meaning like 50, 60 of them every year. And then you can have unofficial visits, and those are unlimited. And they have to come at certain times in the year, but they're wide chunks, like anytime from February 28th. Until June 1st, our campus is open on any of those days. You can come and visit, and coaches kind of plan like, hey, here's our junior day. Here's an open practice that could be fun. We're doing some activities that you might, you know, that might be cool for you. Unofficial visits, kids can take as many as they want, and the kid or the kid's parents pay for that trip. They pay for their own food. They pay for their own hotel. Official visit, this program can pay for your food, they pay for your hotel, they pay for your flight. And that's why, more than anything else, official visits were shut down. Before COVID fully hit, I talked to a couple college football coaches who told me, we have checked with our university's lawyers, and what they're saying is, if a parent gets COVID and dies on our dime during their flight, we are liable.
Uh-oh.
And that is why...
It's terrifying.
That is why official visits have extended, or why they've been declined, and why the NCAA keeps pushing this back. They want to make sure enough people are vaccinated that it won't be an issue for the school. That's been the issue. That was the issue before. As soon as the COVID situation started, I had a Pac-12 program said, they will not be official visits allowed in our conference, I would be willing to bet, until vaccinations. And last March, that seemed like, how is that even possible?
Yeah.
That's forever. And now here we are. And sure enough, that proved to be right. And the reason was and I don't know how this works, the university's law team, I'm sure every university has a group of lawyers that look over things. When they looked over it, they said, if we have an official visit and a parent or grandparent gets it after the visit and they die, we're liable and they can sue and we'll lose. And so that's why it's taken this long.
That makes sense. But now they can do it.
And Oregon's hosting.
In May. Coming to May.
Into June. Yeah, Dane Shore is the most interesting name on the board right now, taking a visit. Over 30 offers. Missed his junior year. Offers from Alabama, Auburn, LSU, Miami, Michigan, Oregon, Oklahoma. Oregon is getting one of his 5 official visits. He hasn't set a date yet. 6'6", 280-pound kid. Played in Florida. Transferred to Georgia. Big-time prospect. He is going to be one of the many, many names to watch here over the next few months. But get ready, because we are going to ramp up. And every week, we're going to start talking to guys planning visits and guys taking visits. That's going to be back to the old normal. Thank goodness, after more than a year. Thank you for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. As always, appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the show for college recruiting fans with the